Okay.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. Today is August 20th, and we are continuing in the section of our Revelations and Doctrines of the Second Invitation. We're going to be on page 130. Now, last week, we went through a lot of several previous verses that dealt a lot with orphans and what happens to them, the sadness that follows them through their life, infants into young children and youth and into adulthood, and what does that mean for everybody, and how do their lives change without the love of loving parents and a loving family to raise them? And we explored the fact that they are raised with this lack of caring. They have no desire to be good because they don't see the reason for that. It's a constant struggle to survive in a world that is sometimes very, very lacking of food or shelter, especially love and security. And that sometimes the weight of the world just totally takes them over, and they can't handle it anymore. We were given some examples there of how they were praying to Jesus to get just to understand why they were in the plight they were, and would have someone come to show them love and take care of them. The last two verses we did not go over, and so I just want to touch lightly on those before we go into the next section. This apparently, this need to have our children, the orphans, taken care of, the people who are lost in the struggle of living in this human life, to be taken care of, that's what the Lord is asking us to do. You add that to the sentiments that we are taught in the sealed book and in the Acts of the Three Nephites, and I think it's very important to link these two together. That's what 85 is talking about. The world is not going to stop having wars. It's not going to stop having social things that create an increasing number of these orphans. That's not going to happen right now in the way the world is going. But it says that it's the sensitivity of our hearts that is going to change this. And Mauricio has talked about this. I think it's something to reflect on how, and these verses talked about how if one family could just extend love and warmth to one individual who needs it, that it will make a change in the world. One of the thoughts that have come across strongly to me is that Satan has such a great opportunity to attach to these individuals who are not raised with love. They're easier to be taken over. Where it says that Jesus is saying it pleases him and it pleases his Father when someone reaches out, and that it has more pleasing, it's more, shows more love to our Father and to Jesus than anybody who could stand up in some church activity and make a presentation or consider themselves, you know, I did a great job at preparing this conference or this relief society get together for all the wards, you know, that many people get hung up on that. And they're not looking at what the real reason that the Lord is bringing us together. And 86 talks about how pain is taken from the heart of individuals just because someone has taken the time to share love with them. And this is important in what we are learning of the sacred they turn around the eternal circle, how all of this is coming together. So starting on 87, we're starting a small another section, again attached to what the Lord is asking us to do, and telling us how the past is intertwined with the future. What we learn today was taught also in the Old Testament and the New Testament, but it's being brought forward to us again. So, who could read number 87, verse 87 on page 131 for us?
I will.
Thank
Blair?
you. No, go ahead, Steve.
All right. Otherwise, the church in general will be subject to being affected in the future by various evils arising from their personal disinterest with their fellow men, which requires from everyone a return to the true status of your belief, erected such as an ensign of your faith and propagated by the first elders of the restoration.
Any thoughts on that? Thank you, Russell, for putting this on the screen. That's really nice. I like the color you chose. I
Well,
want to look at the word disinterest.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I want to look at the word disinterest. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's interesting that it's pointed out that there's the church is the root of the problem here, and that we need to realize that it's part of the problem of, I think it focuses into, doing the standard things and not worrying about really opening our hearts and getting out and solving the problems, because we're caught up in the pattern.
I think another way to look at that word disinterest is to flip it over. If I've got disinterest or personal disinterest with my fellow man, that implies that I have more interest in myself and selfish things. And as a root, therein lies the problem.
Yes.
Gene, when you brought that up, I thought distracted.
Good.
The word that comes to my mind is disconnected.
Well, I like that too.
And I felt that in some of the meetings, very disconnected because they're overwhelmed by trying to help so many people, but they just kind of put a wall up to disconnect themselves from the root of the problems with the people. If that makes sense.
Actually makes perfect sense.
So I know, Robert, you haven't like been in LDS. I don't know how the RLDS work. And Michael, I know your background's LDS. Bill, your background's LDS, yeah. And Steve's had a chance to be in there. It's a lot of stuff. Many people, the missionaries or we bring to meetings, they're like overwhelmed and openly say, you guys have too many things to do, too many meetings, too many this, too many that. And I can see the members be overwhelmed. Just like Valera said, they end up putting a wall up. They just go through the motions. It's traditional. And then they very easily lose sight of the goal, and the goal changes. It's like in order to be able to do things, they move the goalpost so that they don't have to reach out so far into the truth of what is going on. Yes, Russell.
But it's even reduced more now. I mean, it used to be the church, the LDS church at least, was a social center. You used to have lots of activities. You'd have golden green balls. You would have activities. There's just almost gone away. And even the home teaching program, when it was changed to ministry, it's become nothing. I mean, I've got a home minister now that was a past bishop, not in this area, but and I can't get him to visit me. I'd say, hey, come and visit. Come and visit. And he's a good friend and so forth. But he says, I'm just too busy. And, you know, in general, I don't see the ministry program doing what it's doing. And then when they chop the services down from 3 hours to 2 hours, it becomes this the Sunday school portion, you know, is, you know, what week do you cover now? Because it's they got this this weekly program. And yet, who covers what in their lesson? It's a real mess.
Yeah.
And so it's not that they're overwhelmed. It's just that it's been put in the back plate, kind of.
I think verse 89 is going to get into some of that. Very much so, things are not the way the Lord has asked them to be. We've become maybe more earthly, carnal, more wanting to do the things we like to do. Not saying I'm perfect, but you know, there's a lot of thought that's going on right now about the saying, "The sins of the fathers are brought upon the children and the next generation," and we're trying to learn a little bit about that with the eternal round, how that works. I don't know if people are afraid of, well, anyway, let's go on to 88. This is a really, really long, so let's read part of it. About halfway through, there's a thing that talks about general authorities and stops with the death of my servant Joseph Smith. There's a period there. Let's go that far. Okay, I arbitrarily just picked that because I saw a period. All right. Who could read that far for us? Thank you, Russell.
Okay. And when I refer to the true statutes of the restoration, I'm not reporting to the concept that cling to those who call themselves fundamentalists, less to those who consider themselves orthodox to the laws stipulated by the church nowadays, in accordance with the convenience from the moment. Inasmuch as the fundamentalists protest against the modifications occurred with the plural marriage and with the endowment to the blacks, clinging to the rigid obedience to the principles and doctrines that they claim to be original. On the other hand, they disregard that the same already has been created or altered by decree of the general authorities after the death of my servant, Joseph Smith.
Okay.
I think what's being said here is that Brigham Young created a different church than what Joseph Smith created, that he redirected it. And then the fundamentalists grabbed a hold of that foundation and said, oh, we're going to stay there. And yet even that foundation wasn't correct.
I don't know anything about the fundamentalists or the Orthodox, but lately it just seems like I've heard these two words an awful lot. There must be some reason for that. Does anybody have an idea about those groups?
Well, the fundamentalists are the polygamists, right?
Correct.
Of course, I think there may be some others too. I don't know what best describes the Orthodox.
Okay.
I wonder if the Orthodox in this case is referring to the LDS. They cling to the rigid obedience to the principles and doctrines that they claim to be original. On the other hand, they disregard the same already had been created. So like you said, Russell, you know, what Brigham Young changed, they're claiming that to be the original, and they cling to that. They're the Orthodox.
I think that's right.
Okay.
If I can find it, there's a verse in the Nemenha temple ceremony where you've got the father in heaven and the mother in heaven, and they learn a new thing in the universe. And I believe it's the mother in heaven says, "Let this be instructive to us all." Oh, let's see. Did I find? I did a search. Here it is. "We have learned that things are not static, that the cosmos must progress, and when it does, that which we knew to be true does cease to be for us. In the past, our people followed a path that created much evil and suffering for the sake of just a little good. And in the orthodoxy of our own self-interest, we were, for an unfathomable period of time, entirely insensible to other people that are like us, yet not like us. Let this be instructive to us all. When we become orthodox, let us seek for alternatives." So I think, I mean, it's a great example that we kind of get set in our ways sometimes, right? That things have been passed down from our parents, our grandparents. It's just kind of ingrained in us from one generation to the other, and they just become traditions. When we get to a point where it's kind of static, let us seek for alternatives. Let's kind of break out of this orthodoxy and seek for, the universe is a wide, it's a big place, and there's many alternatives out there. And I think that's one thing that we should be careful of, is not getting stuck into a certain mindset, locked in, as it were.
Yeah, those who make it when in these last days are those that follow the spirit, and that's by very definition, you're not getting locked in, you're right.
Michael, I like the way you've put that, definitely. It feels like that's what we are trying to get away from, the traditions. We're trying to open our minds to the spirit, to the information of the eternal round. And looking at, so the isn't it the RLDS Church that allowed the blacks to have the priesthood? Long, long before LDS said it was, they were going to follow that.
Well, they had a revelation.
Yes.
The LDS Church never had a revelation. And so
No, it true. And now look where they are. They're following that revelation. They're not going to admit that it's a revelation they're following, but they're saying, "Oh yeah, we can go ahead and do this."
we didn't get any comments from Robert. I'm anxious to hear about Robert and the RLDS experience.
Well, I don't know about the history, but it's never been a problem for me growing up in the RLDS. It's just been a way of life of having racial
Equality.
diversity or whatever in all facets of the church.
And you didn't have the fundamentalist polygamy aspect of it either.
No. No. No, but the RLDS became sort of self-righteous, and so we missed the boat that way. So that's what I was thinking about, that when you asked the question before, Sister Jeannie, about what personal insensitivity, whatever that
Oh yeah.
was you're
Disinterested.
insensitive, what's happening inside, And there's a difference between righteousness and self-righteousness. So, anyway. Anyway, let's keep going back to the well.
Yes. I think when we stay so much in traditions, we lose that sensitivity because we're not asked to use it. We're just asked to, like, okay, stand up. It's like reading the same story over and over again. You lose the meaning of the whole thing after a while. Okay, so let's go on. It starts there. As for the Orthodox, who would like to read that part?
Again.
Okay, thank you.
As for the Orthodox, they blindly cling themselves to these same principles which were invented or arbitrarily adopted in merely human councils by high-ranking leaders of the Utah Church and propagated as being the original and pure doctrines of my gospel, as reinstated to its due place. Yet in the beginning of the Restoration, and here I am not talking about the plural marriage or the granting of the tablets to blacks, since the first became reason of abomination in my eyes, by reason that you are now well aware of, and the second never was instituted by my will. But in both cases, as for the fundamentalists as well as the Orthodox, the sacrament is considered the most sacred of my church's restored ordinances in this last dispensation. Yet neither of these two disputes the disagreements that exists in their ceremony adopted after the death of Joseph Smith about the true statutes of their faith, which are contained in the Bible, in the Book of Mormon, Doctrine and Covenants, and in the Pearl of Great Price. I'm not sure if I understand what just was said. It said the sacrament is the most sacred, and then is it saying that the sacrament has been changed? Is that what it's saying?
I think they never reconciled the differences that occurred over time. That's my take on it.
Right.
Who's the they?
Maybe the leaders of the two groups?
Right, LDS and fundamentalists and others.
Okay. And this would include the RLDS, or are they not included in this they?
They're special. I don't know. That's a good question.
But it says these two, and so it's the, I guess it's just the Orthodox and the fundamentalists we're talking about here.
Well, I kind of took it to mean that after the death of Joseph Smith, everybody kind of went haywire and started putting their own spin on things. And then they never wanted to rectify that. They never wanted to say, we have it right, we have it wrong. They didn't stand up for it. And the sacrament is found in all of the books that we use as scriptures. And yet these two groups didn't, they just kind of let it go by the wayside and not address it. That's kind of my thought. So is Mauricio the first one that has brought this up as far as, getting it right? Has anybody else ever asked these questions that Mauricio said?
Well, I think that there are. I mean, Denver, for instance, is very strong. It's interesting. He started out supporting polygamy, and now he's very strongly against it. And I've asked him why, or when he changed, and he won't tell me what changed his mind on that. I think it's because he actually met Joseph Smith, because he has met Joseph Smith. I don't know.
Okay. There seems to be a lot of difference just within the movements that grew up out of Joseph Smith. And it's interesting that there's so many different aspects. The one thing that is prevalent among all of them is the sacrament. And that is also the one thing that Mauricio has picked out in his teachings from the angels who have visited him to bring forward as the most important thing to work on. And he's still trying to get it right, because we are an international group and there's a lot to consider. But again, this is saying that we, you know, we blindly follow. We just follow the person in front of us. John Pratt had a article that he wrote September 19th in 2020 that's on his site, and it's the changes to the LDS Church. I think that's an important article to read about how everything was changed. And then the other one that I've always loved that he wrote is, I don't know that I can remember it, it's called The Blindness Conditioning. Oh yeah, I wrote it down. April 22nd, 2007. And it has references to DNC 123.12. Blindly following without asking it. It's a longer article, and within it he has this section on blindness conditioning. Kind of, to me, totally explains what this verse 88 is talking about, the conditioning, the following, and how we need to change. We can't stay in that. So what Bill has been sharing with us with this conference that he's heard about, many people are waking up. The Lord has told us to share the gospel, the sealed book, with people, and then let the Lord work on them. And I think that you can see that just in this idea of these people wanting to put this conference together. We can see it in the city of refuges that are starting to spring up in the United States. They're all important things to look into and to understand. One question that I've run into this week has been, why does Second Invitation speak specifically to the Joseph Smith LDS, RLDS, to that movement? Why are we, it is suggested to us to work with these people rather than the ones that call themselves Christians, all these other Baptists, Lutheran, all these other churches? What, why?
I think it's in the next verse.
Okay.
Because that group is going to be totally discombobulated here shortly.
Okay, Bill, you raised your hand.
I was going to say that one of the possible common threads is the Book of Mormon. That was delivered to this earth by the power of God to prepare for his second coming. And if people receive that book and reject it, these are the ones who have denied the greater light. And so it seems to be the working population are those who understand and accept the Book of Mormon. And they can build on that. They'll receive more truth, more knowledge, and more light, which is prophesied in the scriptures.
Okay. Yes, Robert.
Yes, I agree with Bill. I think that's the main point is... the Lord sent the Book of Mormon as the new covenant that is the new standard that people need to adopt. And it's not that missionary effort shouldn't take place outside of the restoration groups, but I think the Lord's saying that's the fertile, going to be the fertile field. You know, we've got the... Well, people like Mauricio himself, he first started as a Catholic and then as a, whatever the other churches, the Jehovah Witnesses and before he became a LDS member in what is early adulthood, I think. You know, and other people, they're now in the restoration who weren't born into the restoration, but that was their place. So I think the Lord is aligning people. You know, the Doctrine and Covenant says that righteousness and truth will sweep the earth as with a flood, and to gather mine elect from the four quarters of the earth. Well, I think that's what's happening. Whether they were LDS members or not, perhaps they have embraced that higher message, you know, by their lifestyle or by, well, something in the eternal round or whatever.
I think I might add to that, that little line in the introduction to the Book of Mormon, and contains a fullness of the everlasting gospel. And that was his church restored. And that would make sense to me, looking at a group of people that the foundational, or the at least the ones that had the right information and the most information, would stand out amongst others. Not trying to make us better or less than anybody else, just we had the right information when we started. They've done a lot. Right. They've done a lot with that, as we can see, that has distracted, diverted, and got them in apostasy.
Well, there's also people that are totally afraid of the Book of Mormon. They're not ever going to say that, but they have a deep down fear of what the Book of Mormon might teach them. Anyway, let's go ahead and read 89. I didn't know that we would get this far, but 89 has some really good thoughts. So, okay. And this is the one that Russell asked us to put some thoughts together. I wrote them down, Russell. I forgot where I put them. Sorry. I really did try. Okay, I'll go ahead and read this one. Verse 89, everything is about to collapse. For the religion of Latter-day Saints is full of precepts and traditions extracted from Babylon, the mother of all harlots. The singular position of the churches of the Restoration today is appalling, with regard to the men who have been appointed to preside over them. Doesn't the story of the great model apostasy serve them? When did I designate the keeper of the keys to my kingdom on earth as Pope, Father of your faith? Nevertheless, it has been said by me, Jesus Christ, I have not called anyone your father on earth, because one is your father who is in heaven. So do you not call anyone a teacher, for your teacher is Christ, the Son, only begotten of the Father. So
that's, amen.
Yeah, strong, forceful, to the point.
So I'm trying to understand, when he talks about the Pope, is he saying that the LDS Church has set up their president, prophet, as a Pope, basically?
I think outside people,
a father,
think of him as being the same level as what the Catholics say their Pope is.
Yeah, I know they hang on every word.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy out there, and it shocks me every time I hear somebody who says, oh, you're Mormon, and therefore you don't believe in Christ. You believe that Joseph Smith is a leader of your church. And then they can't accept that, but they can accept this man being a Pope. as a leader of the church. They just, I don't know, they just get so, and when I tell them Joseph Smith is not the lead, we believe in Christ, they just look at you like, you don't even know what you believe. Like, of course you're wrong.
A major turning point for me in my LDS experience was a talk given by, I think it was Pullman. I don't know if you've heard that talk, but he gets up and talks about the church as a vehicle, that really Christ is your destination, and that you should have this, be working in that direction, and the church can assist you in that path. And the church retracted the talk and had him re-present the talk and changed it. And when I read the two side by side, and then they republished it in the records, as if, so when you read the incident articles, they had changed and altered his talk. It was shocking to me, shocking, because I had grown up as a Catholic. And so I saw this migration in the direction. It was a gradual migration in the direction. Now, all your focus and attention is on this man who stands on this pulpit, Swami Umpton, to give you the word of God. And we have lost our focus that Jesus Christ is who we should be focusing our attention on. So this I just share, that was a personal experience that I went through.
Yeah, that talk talked about the difference between the gospel and the church.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very powerful.
Yeah.
Does that show Satan's strength in these days? He can change our thoughts so much that we don't even recognize Jesus as our leader. Robert, you had your hand up.
I was just going to say, this is interesting because this can work both ways. We're looking from the restoration to the Catholic Church. Well, the Catholics can do the same in reverse. They say we hold up the prophet as the Pope. I think perhaps the difference may be revelation. I don't know if the Pope ever, I know what he says can become doctrine in the church, in the Catholic Church, but the prophet, when he speaks, we hold that as doctrine, whether it's voted on and approved by the members or not. And we, in a way, we hold him to a high accountability of infallibility, a high standard of infallibility, because if he would say one thing that's wrong, then we'll be, it's kind of like Eve in the Garden of Eden, doubt creeps in, you know? Well, what has he said? If I don't believe this one thing, well, then what about this other thing? So it's interesting. I mean, and the Lord says what the prophet says is the same as what he says. I mean, it's interesting how the Lord placed a person in that responsibility, but I think it has to do with revelation and the whole process of revelation, which other churches don't embrace like the Restoration Church does. Anyway, just think about it.
I want to comment on your quote there. It wasn't, the quote isn't whatever the prophet says, it's what my servant says. And I doubt that all prophets can be fit into that designation. I wish I could find the quote, the verse right now. It's in section one, I believe. But anyway, I think the people will claim a person as a prophet, but he's not really the prophet. I mean, he's not. And that's the reason why LDS Church has never had any revelations since Joseph Smith. I mean, Brigham Young had it supposedly a revelation, but it's written by a committee. I don't really count that as a revelation from Brigham Young. It's not a thus saith the Lord kind of thing. And I think that what you just quoted about whatever my servant says, is, I wish I could find the verse. I don't think we can apply that to the prophet either.
Is it verse 6, section 1, verse 6?
I don't think so.
or maybe 14.
No. And maybe it's not sexual.
17 talks about my servant Joseph Smith.
Yeah. It's whatever it says, or the servant says, it's
whether by mine own voice or by the voice of my servants, it is the same. That one?
Yeah, where's that one?
Good question. I don't know if that's, oh, verse 38, same yeah. section.
Okay, that's where I started looking, but I just wasn't seeing it. Whether by my own voice or the voice of my servants is the same. Yeah, and I don't think we can take that word servants and apply it to just to the prophets. As you pointed out earlier, it was referred to Joseph Smith, but I don't think we can. And that's the problem, is that that verse has been taken and then just automatically applied to whoever happens to be the president of the church. And I think that's a mistake. Because I think that the very thing that this verse we just read, where the church has adopted precepts and traditions of Babylon, that's one of the traditions of Babylon, is that the one man can be the leader and direct everything. Yeah, I made my list, and I don't know if you want to look
put it
at
back
it
up.
Or yeah. View it. And I hope there's, I'm sure there's other things that could be on this list.
One thing that struck me when I was thinking about Babylon and Jerusalem and everything was that this was back in the era where they had kings and they were taught. People were expected, they had no choice, that this was what they did, was they stood up and followed whatever the king said. So that was one man is in charge. And it continued to flow forward in history like that same thing.
Yeah, and that's a Babylon principle.
Yes.
I want to just go through these and see if I've forgotten to fill them out completely. I already talked about one. I discourage anyone from making direct contact with God. In other words, you don't go out like Joseph did and try to talk to God or even try to make contact or have a second comfort or experience. Peter says we're supposed to do that. And yet it's really dissuaded. Hierarchy of leadership. They talk about keys. You got to have the keys in order to do anything. And so there's several levels of hierarchy. And to honor the president and prophet by standing in his presence. In fact, I don't know if you'll notice that when they walk in and out of the conference center, they always walk by seniority. The senior apostle always precedes the next and so forth. That there's a very strict seniority presence there. The worship takes place in chapels or in temples. All money is paid to the church, is then distributed to the poor. It's interesting that the tithing receipt on it says that it doesn't matter how you designate it. You can designate this as a fast offering or so forth, but it's the property of the church and they can do with whatever they want.
Right.
And baptism requirements, you know, it's not a matter to repent and desire baptism. You got to acknowledge the current president as a prophet. There's a whole list of about 10 different items. An expectation to acknowledge all the leaders, at least all the Quorum of the 12 and the First Presidency as prophets, seers, and revelators, even though they never do anything in seership. They never give us any, thus saith the revelations, thus saith the Lord revelations, but we have to acknowledge that. This covenant path thing, Temple tends to kind of final step in that covenant. This whole covenant path thing is only a few years old. It's only like in the last 10 years that we've even had the term covenant path. And they've completely replaced the scriptural term straight and narrow path. The straight and narrow path is defined in the scriptures and defines how that path starts and so forth. There in 2 Nephi 31, you've got to have a born again experience. You've got to have a confirmation of the Spirit to even get on the path. And so by converting it all over to a covenant path, now you can easily measure it and see where people are on the covenant path. And then the requirements to be a full tithe payer, even to go to the temple and so forth. So anyway, that's just my list. There's probably some other ones.
So I've been out of the church a while. I hadn't heard about the covenant path. That's interesting.
You haven't listened to conference in the last several years. It's really common. It's really common nowadays. We listen to Tyler and Taylor on the study path the church has, and so it's going through the New Testament right now. But he'll quite often mention the covenant path, and it's just a really common thing for the seminaries and institutes and the leaderships of the church and the talks. Anybody who listens to the conference, at least several talks will mention the covenant path.
Well, so I really appreciate you compiling this list. It's pretty compelling. And I'm like Gene, I've fallen away. I still have really active members of friends in the church, especially my daughter. And I do look at the topics from the conferences and scan them. But my take on that is fewer and fewer of the conferences make any reference to the Book of Mormon. The last conference I looked at, I found one talk that had some site referencing the Book of Mormon. I don't know if that's true or accurate, but that's my observation, that they're just distancing themselves from that book because of some of the things that are taught there.
I don't know how some of you all take this, but it kind of makes me feel a little nauseous to have that conditioned blindness, even though I've risen above that to the point where I can see most of these things, but to have it stripped away and to think about all those that remain in that fog of faithful following, completely blind. Good example of that. In my excommunication meeting, where I was kind of excited to go, because I had all this new information and had printed up several pages, you know, I'm talking 8, 10, 12 pages into 3 or 4, you know, stapled groups for the stake president and his counselors and the scribe. I was prepared. I was going to find an Alma in there somewhere. It got to a conversation about, do you sustain the president? And I thought for a minute, and I was on the border of tears being in there because the Spirit was on me. And I told him, I said, I just don't have enough information. I said, I know this prophet in Brazil because I've witnessed the prophecies and his revelations, and the Spirit filled me in some unusual ways, and I've had visions and all kinds of things about it. I have no doubt about him. But it was a conscious action of dealing with the truth that this man doesn't prophesy. He has no prophecies fulfilled. He does not have the priesthood. He doesn't, you know, and they told me this. We want you to pray about it. I'm like, that sounds like a canned answer to something. You have no answer to it. You know it's wrong. So just go do that. What do you pray about? He's got no prophecy to pray about. I mean, but they've come so conditioned with dealing with these kind of things that they had, in my understanding, they have a pat, go do this, go do that. And don't confront me with that.
Well, there is no doctrine. There is no doctrine in the LDS Church except follow the prophet. That's all that's left.
But when I left there, you know, because I put them in a position they had no choice. You're going to have to get rid of me because I'm not. They wanted me to go. You can go to church, but you can't talk about this. And I'm like, a gag order. You know, my heart's full and wants to share. And I want to jump up and down and dance in the hallway and say, look what I felt. Look what was given me. Or look what you can have. And it was a gag order. You can come, but you can't talk and you can't do no more talk. And I'm looking at him like, I've been given this great gift. There's no way you're going to gag me or keep me from sharing this. Said, I can't do that. The truth is the truth. And of course they took it away and voted me out, going to give me the official paperwork. And I'm walking down the hallway afterwards feeling about 20 pounds lighter. Because I had just been set free, I knew it. And, you know, all the little talk about you'll have to give up your garments and all that thing. You guys are caught up in traditions to the point you're worried more about garments than you are about the freedom in your heart.
Garments make them money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that where they also, didn't they tell Balkia and Harm the same thing? You can come, but you can't talk about it.
Yeah, they must have a manual they're working off of with that. But I mean, I love the people and the state president is a person who I really have a lot of respect for, but it's just can't see, don't want to hear. It's okay. It's all supposed to be for whatever purpose the Lord has put in there for.
Russell.
I want to talk about one more thing before we end. And that's the first phrase there. Everything is about to collapse. How soon do you think that collapse will happen?
It's already in progress.
It's some parts of it is, yes, already in progress. Bill?
I think it is in progress. I just like this group of people here coming to realize it's a small group here, but the knowledge that you have. And can I ask you this? One thing that just shocked me. Having been raised Catholic, when the president, the current president of the organization, established the standard of this image of Christ, it's everywhere. It's on all their pages, everywhere you go. And I was like, that's an idol. We are now worshiping an image created by man. And I was so shocked by that. I you know, like Steve kind of, so repulsed by it, I can't even go to their websites now and see that image, which is modeled after the Roman Catholic images. So I don't know if that was your reaction, but this is just another, I think this is a sign of the collapse that's taking place. They're trying to bring them into that ecumenical group and unite them with all the other churches. It looks like that's what they're trying to do. And people will wake up and they'll bail out.
Yeah, a lot of those images were actually painted by non-Mormon artists. They were hired by the church. Anderson was one of them. Anyway, but I wanted to make, I don't know if I mentioned it here, a prophecy that where a lady was shown a vision of Temple Square. Did I mention this here before? It was 25 years ago. She saw a vision of the Temple Square and each building that would be built there. And she says, and I was told this here a year or two ago, and every year when a new building would go up, it would match her vision. And she never expected to tell anybody this vision, but she was told by the Lord to tell it in this conference I went to, Doug Mandenhall. And she says, now all the buildings have been built except for one. There's still one on Main Street that's just started, and that building is finished now. In fact, I've been inside that building. It's just a business, and I think it's got apartments in it. But after that building was finished, there was an explosion in Northwest Salt Lake, and it knocked the top floors off the Salt Lake Temple. I think it's so interesting the way the LDS Church is spending millions and millions of dollars to make that temple earthquake proof. And it's still not opened back up yet, but I don't think that temple will ever be opened again. I think this explosion that she saw, it will happen. And the way things are happening right now in our country. I don't know if our country is going to last to the next election. There's just so much underfoot that I would not be surprised to see something happen this year or next that disrupts our country and the church, the Utah church.
Thank you for sharing that, Russell.
So the list that you put up about the Babylon thing, if we took out the specific references to prophet or those type, you could almost see that list being the same in many, many of the churches on the earth today.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a good, it's a good thought process to think of what other churches are, where they're headed and how people are dogmatically following their leaders. So I want to share something with you guys. This was kind of eye-opening to me. This happened to me yesterday. The guy that owns my apartment complex, his name is Austin. Very, very, very religious, very much with a lot of love in his heart to help fellow man and bring them to the love of Christ. But a lot, like almost a year ago, he looked at me and he said, "You're Mormon, and that's wrong." And I've heard this before. It was just like, okay. Well, I've been thinking on this a lot. And yesterday he was in his workshop and I went in and I said to him, "You know, all this feeling that you have towards Mormon, you act like it's wrong." I said, "I get the feeling that you believe in a different Jesus Christ than I believe." And he just looked at me, and at first he couldn't answer. And then he said yes, which totally shocked me, because that was not the answer I expected. He said yes, and I said, "So you're saying your Jesus is different from my Jesus? How can that be? There's only one Jesus." He said, "Yeah, that's true. Mine is right and yours is wrong." And I am just like, so we have this whole conversation. And all of it, his words are steeped in tradition. There's so much love in his heart, and he doesn't see that what he's saying might be just a semantics, is that the right word, on the words he's using and the words that we use. I told him, I said, we don't say Joseph Smith is the leader of the church. Of course not. It doesn't say this is the church of Joseph Smith. They said this is Christ's church. And finally he came out in the conversation. He said to me, he said, "You know, my goal is to convert you to my church." I was like, "Well, okay, but that's not going to happen." And then he said, "Well, is your goal to convert me to your church?" And I said, "No. It's not my role to convert you. My role is to explain things and tell you, and the Lord's going to talk to you." And he just couldn't handle some of that stuff. And I've heard some of these things from other people that believe that our role is just following Joseph Smith. And they can't get past that item, that in polygamy, to begin to listen to anything that the second invitation has brought forward. And in the end, he invited me to his church group. And but what the whole conversation did for me, because in the last 4 months I've really struggled with how I feel there's a lot of LDS like hierarchy and things put into place into Mauricio's, into the Brazil setup of the church. And was that right or wasn't it right? But it's the Lord's church, And so the setup has to be right. I think I was just leery of falling into current LDS practices. And so when he said to me, no, I'm going to convert you to my church, it was just like, you've got it all wrong. You can have so much love for the Lord in your heart and not see what is there available for you. You're not willing to open up and learn about other things. And this is what, so you're either on one side or the other side. You're either, yeah, I'm not going to listen to anything, or yeah, give me more. And I think that's where we're at in all the people on earth. And so Bill's finding of this group that is wanting to go forward, I think it's worth looking into them. And I don't think that we should ever just think to ourselves, well, they're not LDS, so they're not going to listen. Maybe they're not. Obviously, Austin didn't listen very well to me, but we have to put the thoughts and the ideas out there. He could not refute a lot of the things that I said to him, and he did the traditional thing, just like Steve said there. Yeah, follow the prophet. His words were, no, the Lord is only going to let certain people come to heaven. And I'm like, that's not true. And he's like, yes, it is. So you might get into some things that you've never heard, but you're planting the seed. And he walked away kind of like not knowing what to do with me.
Well, why didn't you tell him you're not LDS?
I did many times.
Oh, okay.
Many times. And he kept saying that this was man's church. He said, his name is right on it. It says the Church of Jesus Christ. And he's like, so you don't have to have his name on it. I said, why not? I mean, he is so traditional to what he's been taught and not willing to open, and yet loving the Lord so very much. So anyway, I'm just sharing a little bit of things that are out there in this world. Apparently there's two Jesuses.
And there's good people out there.
There is, that are lost. Yep. But he thinks I'm lost. So, Robert.
Well, can I just address the question of when the collapse will happen? All I know is what I can observe, what the Lord's doing. Things are coming together to fulfill the commandments of the Lord with the purchase of the property in Brazil, and the work taking place now to transform the place into a place of refuge, prepared for a number of families to come to. And so now the School of Prophets is in the second 3-month session. And at the end of this, from what Mauricio said before, is that around November will be the end of the second section. And then there'll be come the time to start the United Order. And that would allow people to live on the place of refuge with all things in common. And so that's where we're facing us. So what we need, I think we need to act as if this is it. This is the opportunity for at least some of us, probably Brazilians because they live there, to start this United Order on this place of land, which will be the beginning of a number of, the Lord called them Zion refuges. And so there'll be several scattered around, or multiple ones scattered around Brazil. And so I think that's what's facing us today as a people, is to come from where we are, to be prepared, if we're called, to go to the place of refuge. So hopefully that can be done before any financial collapse, because it'll just make it so much harder afterwards. But that we're in a critical phase of the church between now and November.
Thanks for sharing that, Robert.
If I might add, I mean, this topic of collapse, I've kind of been fixated on it for, you know, a few years now, having read a bunch of books and whatnot. And I mean, it used to scare the heck out of me, you know. But I've listened to others, you know, more recently, that this, you know, this represents the fall of an ancient system, right? The fall of Babylon. If this collapses, the prophesied fall of Babylon, you know, we should almost not be scared of it. We should almost embrace it, as it were, because it represents the fall of this ungodly system that has enslaved us, you know, this debt enslavement that we find ourselves in with the central banks and, you know, paper currencies and whatnot. They use it as a system of control to control the people. And I think the Lord is bringing that system down and bringing in a new system. And I think, yes, it's going to be a difficult transition as we go through it, but we should, you know, almost look forward to it, because God is bringing back his system and taking down the enemy's system. So yes, it can be scary, you know, to think about, but if you look at it from that perspective, we should almost be looking forward to it, because it's taking us out of that bondage. Just like the children of Israel were taken, you know, at 400 years of bondage, we've been suffering under generations of bondage in our own country. You know, the Federal Reserve Bank was created in 1913, and that's kind of a pivotal moment in our history in the United States, where this servitude has come about. But we're like the children of Israel. We're passing through the Red Sea, and God is going to show his almighty hand. It's going to be miraculous. We don't know. We're going to have our backs to the Red Sea and Pharaoh's army in front of us and no way for escape. And then the miraculous will occur, whatever that is. But yes, that doesn't mean don't prepare. We should definitely take steps to prepare, like what Mauricio's doing and what Bill's doing and other people, you know, trying to create these refuge places, places of safety where we can flee to. That's definitely something that has to be done. But yeah, I think my perspective has changed, you know, from one of great fear and anxiety of this, you know, this coming collapse, to embracing it and not being so scared about it. Right? This is God bringing down the Babylonian system and bringing his system into play, his Zion, I guess.
Amen. Hey, can I just throw in something here? Some non-member friends of mine shared the video, the song by Oliver Anthony, The Rich Men Above Rich Men. It is going viral. If you guys have not heard that song, you need to check it out, because I think that signifies that it's what Robert was saying. It's coming. when the common man can get on and sing a song like that about, I know what you guys are doing. You don't think we do, but we do. And I'm tired of this system, this dollar system that we're under now. So that's a very inspiring song that you might want to check out.
What's the name of it?
It's Oliver Anthony. The Rich Men Above Richmond. It is a very soulful, heartfelt song about the oppression that we are under the system that Michael just described. And amen, let's get that thing torn down and start again.
Thank you guys, everyone, for participating. Russell, could you turn the recording off?